Welcome, everybody, to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything that we talk about is aimed at helping you to lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in uncertain times. My name is Bridget Tyer, and as always, I am joined today by my good friend and collaborator, Irvin Nugent. Irvin, how are you?
I am doing wonderful. Thank you so much for asking. Great spring weather, and life is good, despite the hurly-burly of the world.
The hurly-burly of the world. I love that phrase. That's great.
So, Bridget, tell us a little bit more. What are we going to focus on today? What's our conversation going to be about?
Okay, so today's topic is leadership embodiment. Mm. And I think a really great place to start is to share a story about Martha Graham. So when I first heard this story, I was so struck by it, and I can't remember when it was. It was years ago, that I wrote about it in a new chapter that we included in the revised and expanded edition of Resilient Leadership 2.0. I was just like, oh my gosh, we have to find a place for this because it reveals so much. And so who is Martha Graham? Well, she was one of the most celebrated dancers and choreographers of the 20th century. She danced and taught for over 70 years, and her style called the Graham Technique reshaped the world of dance, and it's still taught in dance academies all across the world today. So in her autobiography titled Blood Memory, she shared a really interesting story. She talked about an interaction that she had with her father when she was a little girl, and apparently her father caught her in a lie. And she was really surprised. I think she said she thought she was a good liar. And she was surprised at how quickly he was on to her. And he knew she wasn't telling the truth.
Yeah.
And so when she asked him how he knew, he replied simply, "The body never lies." Mm-hmm. You know, hence the title of this episode. And it's such a powerful reminder of the important role that our body plays in communicating, right?
Yeah.
Credibility, yeah. Trust. Yeah. Connection, da, 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 da. So, Irvin, I'm really curious, like, when you hear that story, and I'm sure you've heard it before, but what does it provoke for you?
Well, initially what it provokes, you know, some of the work that I do is in credibility assessment. I actually, which is sometimes called the lie detection, but really it's actually a better way of looking at it is the truth always leaks. Mm. And where it leaks is in our body. As human beings, as embodied human beings, you know, we can say one thing with our mouth, but there's ever so subtle things happening, either with our body language, with our voice, etc. And so the whole science is built up because of this disconnect. And the only thing it provokes is within me is I can remember, you know, my mother always put a brave face on showing up with energy and everything was okay, etc. And, you know, her poor body would always, you know, I can remember that, you know, saying to my mother, you know, how are you doing? She said, oh, I'm fine. And yet not believing it. Mm. And I wonder, why did I not believe it? And it must have been something that she was telegraphing in her body or being tired or down or something. And so even, you know, from that age, we get suspicious.
Yeah, that's so interesting that you knew something was going on with your mom, even at an early age, right?
Yeah.
I mean, clearly, this is important because our bodies are always telegraphing volumes of information mm-hmm. about our inner state to the people around us.
Yeah.
That said, I don't think most leaders are as aware of that. And I think the reason is they don't pay attention to their bodies that much. They're not in tune with their bodies, either their sensations or what their body is trying to tell them or how their body is showing up. And I'm curious if that's been your experience as well with clients.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I have to say that. I think there's a number of reasons for that. I think the business environment, which you've talked about, is one that is incessantly insane in the sense of there is no time, there's no gaps. People are just rushing from meeting to meeting to meeting. So there's no time to even check in with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then I think how we treat our bodies. I mean, you know, I do a workshop. And one of the questions I ask is, how many people here actually take a lunch break? And about one person out of 20 will raise their hand. So when you think about it, we're not attentive to our physical needs even at times. And then I think the other thing is, I think we celebrate intellectual wisdom, but I think we have forgotten that there is a wisdom in the body. And this is the wisdom we're talking about.
Yeah. And furthermore, and you said this as much with, you know, the experience you had with your mother when she would say, oh, I'm fine. And you knew she wasn't. It's really important for us to understand that if there is any daylight, any discrepancy between what we're saying and how our body is showing up, people believe our body over our words.
Absolutely.
The research is absolutely clear on that. So let's say as a leader, you know, there's some big thing going on and you claim that you're calm and copacetic, but your jaw's clenched and there's tension in your body and your brows are furrowed. People aren't going to believe that claim. If you go to a meeting and you say, look, I really want to hear everybody's input. I really want to know what you think, but you have your arms folded over your chest.
Yeah.
And you're kind of angled away from people. That really telegraphs something quite different.
Yeah.
And so if we want to really be powerful communicators and influencers, which we all want to be, we've got to pay attention to the body. And what we have to be really mindful of is the alignment or lack thereof, right? Of our posture, our facial expressions, our mood, our tenor of our voice. And is it aligning with what we want to convey?
Yeah.
You know, or not, right? But maybe we need to back up for a minute because we're talking about embodiment, but we haven't really defined it yet. So Irvin, like, define embodiment for our listeners.
Yeah, it's a good question. So let's turn to the dictionary, our old friend, the Oxford Dictionary. And what does it say about embodiment? And the way it defines it is it's a tangible or a visible form of an idea, a quality, or a feeling. Interesting. So it is a tangible or a visible form of an idea, quality, or a feeling. So for example, you know, sometimes we'll say she seemed to be a living embodiment of vitality. You know, you can, that's great. Yeah, you can just sense a body, like a person full of vitality, what their body would be like. And I think what's important here is that we are shifting beyond an intellectual understanding of something we grasp with our minds to an understanding that's much deeper, where we express it not just with our words, but there's an alignment, a whole body alignment, and we're expressing it with our whole body as a way of being. Express an idea or an intention. And when you think about that, there's a level of confidence, of conviction that comes across. And so therefore, it's not just a thinking process, but rather there's a physicality about it as well.
Yeah.
And so the good news is that, you know, even with simple changes in the way that we sit or we stand or we walk, that can be significant for the impact that it has on others and the way they perceive us and the way we feel about ourselves. So we know this, you know, if we kind of have a collapsed spine and we've slumped shoulders and we communicate that, people often say, wow, you know, they really don't have any confidence or there's no conviction. Yeah. Whereas we embody something tall or upright or relaxed, we telegraph that we have confidence, status, and power. Mm-hmm. You know, I do workshops sometimes for presentation skills. And there's research that I show that the number one thing that people are looking for is enthusiasm. Mm. In fact, enthusiasm covers a multitude of sins. And one of the questions I always ask people is, what does enthusiasm look like? And people will default into intellectual definitions. I said, no. When someone is enthusiastic before you, what's happening in their body? And then people say, oh, their voice has lots of variation and they're standing up straight and there's movement, et cetera. And it's funny, what they get to is this embodiment of what enthusiasm looks like. And so therefore, I think what we're calling for is how curious are we about our body? Like, how well do we observe our body? How well do we know of what our body is conveying? And so often what we've appreciated is wisdom is the brain and the neck upwards. And the body has a wisdom. And we know it because innately we trust it. We've just said that when someone says, I'm fine, and their body doesn't say it, we don't trust the words, we trust the body. And that's the wisdom of the body.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, Bridget, can you think of any leaders you've worked with that were able to embody their values or intentions in a particularly helpful way?
Well, you know, as you were specifically talking about how a tall, upright posture, right? Relaxed, alert, tall spine telegraphs power and confidence. And then, of course, a slumped posture does the opposite. I recalled a leader that I worked with one time, and it was so interesting because he was in the midst of interviewing for two roles at the university where he worked, both highly visible. When I met with him to do some coaching, he had just shown up for the initial round of interviews and he didn't feel like it had gone well. Mm-hmm. And I think he was really curious and he wasn't really sure what was going on there because, quite frankly, he had the perfect resume for the jobs and he knew he could do the job, right? So I'm observing him. I'm sitting across, you know, the desk from him, and then we get up to go down the hallway, and it turns out he's exceedingly tall. He was 6'5". But what I noticed as we walked down the hall together is that he kind of had a curve to his spine. And, and it's sort of, his shoulders were rounded. And so he did not embody his height. And so he appeared slightly slumped, to be honest. And I was very struck by that. It made him look a little bit less tall, but he was still very tall. You couldn't hide that, but also less self-assured. You know, confident. Anyways, I shared the observation with him and I said, are you aware of this? And you know, he really wasn't, but then he recalled that as a young boy, a young man, he had this one year where he grew so tall and, you know, many, many inches. He went back to school and he felt like an outcast. And so he said, I remember kind of hunching my shoulders down so that I would fit in.
Crazy. Yeah.
And he said, I just didn't want to stand out so much. And I was just felt so awkward. And the posture had stayed with him all these years. It became a habit.
Wow.
And, you know, I don't think we realize this, but we all have postural habits.
Yeah.
So this one was not serving him well. And so we talked about what would it feel like if you shrugged that off and really embodied your length. And we practiced, you know, having him put his shoulders back, sit up nice and tall, you know, and notice what he noticed and so forth. And then he made a commitment to go to his interviews in that shape. And what was interesting is he did get one of the roles. He told me later that he felt that when he changed the shape of his body, he felt more confident and he felt he spoke with greater clarity and confidence. And more importantly, perhaps, when he took over the new role, he kept practicing, you know, this tall, upright, right posture, but relaxed. And it allowed him, he felt it allowed him to lead in this new role. So isn't that interesting that, again, to your point, small changes, small tweaks can make a big difference in what we're telegraphing, but also in how we feel about ourselves. So, you know, I just thought that was really cool. But Irvin, so, you know, what about you? You're listening to this story, and I bet in your mind's eye, you're picturing either leaders you've worked with or maybe leaders you've been inspired by, you know, who really embodied the essence of what they believed or who learned to do that through observing themselves.
Yeah. I want to bring an example actually of myself. And a comment I received way back. So I was CEO of a charity organization for homeless young people. So really important mission. And I can remember we were being visited by a very important foundation. And obviously there was a lot on the line because there was going to be some funding decisions. And I can remember being very nervous about the meeting, obviously, because it was very significant. And I remember meeting, there was three people from the foundation, and they were very pleasant, very nice. And I can remember them asking about, why is the mission, why is this mission so important? Why does this mission need funding? We have many, many requests. And I can remember it was almost like an out-of-body experience, but it obviously wasn't. And I can remember, you know, really trying to convey to them the impact of where this money was going and the impact on some of the most vulnerable people in our community. And just being wrapped up in that and really thinking, you know, really thinking about, I was bringing to mind two or three very young people who just come to the organization and really, you know, their stories, which were really harrowing. And so we had the meeting, we came back, and one other person there who was the CEO, we were having a conversation and they just said to me, "Boy, you were really on fire today." And I said, "What do you mean?" And they said, "You just went to a place I haven't seen you gone before." Huh. And I said, "What was interesting?" They said, "Yeah, it wasn't just the words. It was just, it was the way you communicated it with. I mean, there was no doubt." And I remember he said to your body just spoke $1 million. You know, it was a realization when there is alignment with what you are saying, an alignment and a passion for what you're trying to communicate, a belief in what you're trying to communicate, that the body as well takes over. The body is part of that. Yeah. And I think it was just a realization for me how important that is. That so often in leadership, I think we feel we have to convey, you know, it's, I feel sorry for used car salesmen, you know, it's always that, but it's that image what we use because they're, I'm sure they're very ethical ones, but something like trying to sell something we don't believe.
Uh-huh.
And when we are aligned with our belief, when we are aligned with what we want to say, that the body communicates that. It's not just the words, but people feel it. People engage with that. And I think that's what embodiment, I think, looks and feels like.
Mm-hmm. And to your point earlier, when you ask people, what is enthusiasm? Like, what does it mean? And people go into their heads.
Yes.
You were enthusiastic in your answer to this potential fundraiser.
Yeah.
And enthusiasm is contagious.
Totally.
And it, of course, it was also authentic.
Yes.
You can't fake that. That's really the bottom line is we think we're great fakers, but we're not.
We're not.
Yeah. That's a great story. And I bet that was something that really stayed with you for a while.
It did. Yeah. And we got the grant, which is good news.
There you go.
So, Bridget, I'm curious, any final examples or thoughts around this great topic that you want to share?
Yeah, well, I want to let our listeners know, like, if you're really curious about this and you want to do a deeper dive, there's an excellent book by Wendy Palmer titled Leadership Embodiment. And what it includes is a whole bunch of examples, but also a lot of neuroscience. Mm. Like, what does the science really say about this notion of embodiment? And there's just really great stuff out there. And a couple of the points she makes from a science point of view is that our brains and bodies are actually wired for congruence, right? So it actually takes a lot of energy to maintain a physical posture or stance that's not consistent with who we really are or what we really believe. And I don't think we appreciate that, right? It's highly draining in that regard. And that we all carry within us, from a neuroscience point of view, a sophisticated detection system, just like it showed up very early with you, with your mother, for detecting incongruence. And so when someone doesn't seem 100% behind what they're saying, our brains detect this at a level that's beneath conscious awareness. Mm-hmm. And we wouldn't be able to pinpoint it. And if you ask somebody in the moment, they wouldn't even know that they're detecting it, but they are. And it creates a sense of unease.
Yeah. Right?
So I guess the final example I would share is, and this is kind of interesting because it has a lot to do with what we're just saying, is I recently had an opportunity to work with a client first on a Zoom call with her and her boss and myself, and then on a one-to-one call, Zoom call with me for a private coaching session. And on the call with myself, her and her boss, I observed that she, in terms of her body communication, she came across as contained, as somewhat distant, and her facial expressions didn't move a lot, and she seemed a little stiff. And so I guess at some level, I was detecting this, And it was making me a little bit uncomfortable because I'm going to coach this person. And I'm thinking, I don't know if she's going to be coachable, right?
Right.
Because I couldn't access her.
Yeah.
I couldn't read her very well. So then we get on a call, just the two of us. And in a little bit of time, her real nature starts to come through. And her real nature is full of warmth, mm-hmm. engagement, personable, funny. And I thought, wow, it's going to be great to coach this person. But I was so struck by the different versions of herself that I asked her about it, you know? And what she said is, well, you know, I kind of made this decision recently that with like my boss and other colleagues that I needed to show up more serious because I don't think, you know, I think that's a better look in terms of credibility, you know, mm-hmm. professionalism, right?
Sure.
And maybe I tend to be too personable and too, you know, warm. And of course, what she admitted with doing that was actually exhausting.
Yeah.
Right. So I gave her permission to align her body with who she really is and to lean into that.
Oh, wow.
And she started doing that. And I think it gave her a lot of energy. Yeah. I don't know. What strikes you about that?
Well, you know, what really strikes me is the gift that you gave her, because so often we don't get this. So often we never get feedback about our posture. We never, like, sometimes we do it. Like, I can remember growing up and my mother, you know, straighten your back, you know, but apart from that, we never, in the business world, we don't, we get like, oh, your pitch was great. Your idea was wonderful. But when someone, what you were able to reflect back here was like, hold up a mirror to her and say, you know, hey, this is how you're coming across. And there's such an opening there for learning that I think that's a real gift. And so often if people were able to get some of that feedback, it might just open awareness to them. It's like, whoa, okay. So I am speaking a different language and at times is communicating something different that I didn't intend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Irvin, I'm curious, if we're not working with a coach, how do we get that feedback?
It's a great question. And I think there has to be something deliberate there. I think if we have mentors or if we have, sometimes we'll ask people for feedback and like, what feedback am I asking for? You know, very often what we're looking for is intellectual feedback. You know, how did I, you know, how, what do you think of my thought, et cetera, or what's the next move I need to make in my career? But just, you know, a little thoughtful question. Hey, did you notice anything about how I showed up today? Not just sometimes, you know, it's like, what language will people use? And I wonder, you know, how was my presence today? Sometimes that's accessible and it makes people, you know, I'd love some feedback on that. What have you noticed? And I think, you know, to really be deliberate in asking that feedback as well can maybe open some comments for us that could be very enlightening.
Yeah, because as we've discussed before, presence is the energy we telegraph, right?
Yeah, yeah.
As we've discussed, the body is always telegraphing some kind of energy.
Yeah.
Is it the energy of enthusiasm? Is it the energy of optimism? What is it? Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Well, Bridget, this has been such a fantastic conversation, and I love where it's brought us. And I think hopefully it's provoked within our listeners as well a curiosity about how am I showing up? You know, it's a good question. What's happening in my body? And I think, you know, we understand at a very visceral level when there is a disconnect between what our body is telegraphing and our words, we're going to trust the body. There's good research for that and neuroscience backs it up. And so maybe it's an opportunity for us to make a commitment to be more curious about ourselves, to check in with this great font of wisdom that we carry with us and to ask ourselves, you know, what's my body saying today? And I think that can be really helpful. So thank you for leading us in this discussion. Hopefully our listeners are a little more intent on checking in their bodies. Hopefully you have a great week ahead. So bye-bye, everyone. Thank you for listening in.
Thanks, folks. Take care.